What is up, Vermont Edition podcast listener? This is Elodie Reed, digital producer for VPR. Just to let you know, this podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. The Scott administration and key legislative committees are investigating how a serious data breach took place at the Department of Labor involving personal financial information and Social Security numbers. As many as 50,000 people were sent the wrong 1099 tax forms for one of the department's several unemployment benefit programs, and they received the financial information of other people. Governor Phil Scott says the state is taking a three-pronged approach in dealing with this critical issue.
First, we want to make sure that we rectify the situation so that we can get the 1099s in the hands of those who need them, right? So we put a team together in order to accomplish that. The second bucket was making sure that we had protection for those who may be impacted. The third piece was to, an after-action kind of plan, see what happened. So we've been working on that simultaneously.
How did this data breach happen? What steps are being taken to protect the sensitive private financial information of those involved? And what's being done to ensure that a data breach like this one doesn't happen again? These are some of the key questions we have for our guest today, and that's Labor Commissioner Michael Harrington. Commissioner, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having me this morning.
We appreciate you taking the time to be available for us and for our listeners. Commissioner, I thought we could start today by understanding an overview of what's happening. At this time of year, the Department of Labor routinely sends out what are known as 1099 tax forms to individuals who have received some benefits during the past year from a variety of state unemployment programs. And this is being done because these unemployment benefits are taxable?
That's correct. And I would like to just start by, acknowledging this issue and acknowledging the impact it has had on the public and Vermonters. And certainly, I want to make sure I extend my personal apology for what a number of Vermonters are having to go through right now. It's not lost on me the impact that this has had. And we are doing everything within our power to, one, as the governor said, rectify the situation and prevent it from happening again, but also make sure we're able to get timely 1099 documents out to people so that they can file their taxes as quickly as possible. So to answer your question, though, Bob, essentially, unemployment insurance benefits are considered wage replacement, and so they are taxable under the law. Which means that we do have to issue 1099 tax documents, which essentially just certifies or verifies that as a claimant, here is the benefits you received during the course of the last year so that they can file their taxes accordingly.
Now, if I understand it correctly, in a normal year, you usually send out about 6,000 of these tax forms, but the number this year skyrocketed because so many Vermonters filed for unemployment benefits because they lost their jobs during the pandemic. The number is something like 180,000. Is that correct?
Yeah. So during a normal year, at any given time, we have about anywhere from 3,000 to 6,000 claimants filing for benefits, whether it's in a lower part of the season, like the summer, where there are fewer people unemployed, or the winter, when there are a higher number of people unemployed just due to seasonality. In total, the number of people that might go through the unemployment system in a given year could be as high as 15 to 16,000 different people. So, on an annual basis, we might issue that 15 or 16,000 people a 1099 document. When we compare that to this year and everything that has happened as a part of COVID-19, the department is looking at needing to issue about 181,000 1099 documents to about 100,000 people.
That's a staggering number and gives people an indication of just how many Vermonters were affected through their employment with the pandemic, particularly last spring.
Absolutely. I would say it touched just about everybody, whether it was someone was directly impacted through unemployment, or they certainly knew of somebody, a friend, a family member. You know, I have regularly drawn a correlation to the folks that the diligent folks that work in our UI department, that, you know, these aren't folks that live in some other state and are servicing our Vermonters. You know, most likely the people who work in our unemployment insurance division have a friend or a family member that has been impacted by COVID-19 in some way, shape, or form, and has had their unemployment interrupted.
So let's look at the problem. The department is beginning to send out these tax forms this year. Something goes very wrong. Somehow on the computer spreadsheets that are used to generate the form, there's a glitch. Some columns get moved. Some people end up with the wrong financial information on their 1099 tax form, including the Social Security numbers of other people. Is that essentially what happened? Do you know what happened?
We pretty much narrowed down exactly where this issue occurred in the processing. To put it in perspective, so everybody understands essentially what's happening behind the scenes here, the department in 2020 and then into 2021 is managing 13 different benefit streams. So that's everything from regular unemployment insurance, extended benefits, high extended benefits, pandemic emergency unemployment compensation, federal pandemic unemployment compensation, PUA. And then we get into these kind of one-off programs, the supplemental benefits like LWA, the Lost Wages Assistance Program, which came from federal FEMA money that the president authorized in August, or the Vermont Short-Term Supplemental Benefit that the legislature authorized in October. And then we had also a prepaid benefit that was issued back out of the state treasurer's office through the Department of Labor back in April for people who were waiting to get benefits processed when the surge happened. So those are, you know, in total, there's 13 different funding and benefit streams. And the additional piece to that is they're managed out of five separate program systems, right? So when what happened is, looking at some of these ancillary programs, which were literally managed on spreadsheets in the department as a way to make sure we could get the benefits out the door as quickly as possible to Vermonters. We then, as we are validating data, we spend actually a long time as a department validating that the information, the benefit information on the 1099 document, along with the name and social, were correct coming out of these systems. But then as we began to transition those documents to other agencies and departments for validation or printing or mailing, in one of those transitions, there was a sort done on a document where we were sorting by essentially zip code for mailing purposes, and the rest of the columns weren't locked in. And so what it did was jumble the information that was on there. And that's what led to people receiving a 1099 that may have had another claimant's name and or Social Security number on it.
What is your best guess of how many people received information about other people's financial status? What's the total here? Is it 50,000?
Yes. Yeah, so best guess, well, one, we know that the two program 1099s that were impacted were the Lost Wages Assistance 1099 and the Vermont Short-Term Supplemental Benefit 1099. And so if you take both of those populations and look at just unique people in those populations, it roughly equals about 45,000 people. And in some cases, the name and the social on the 1099 that someone received were completely mismatched. So there's somewhat less of a risk there because the name and the social didn't appear together. But in other cases, someone would have received a 1099 with someone else's name and the corresponding social. And that is obviously the most risk in this situation. So again, it's about 45,000 people that would have been impacted and would have received some type of faulty 1099.
So, Commissioner, you've got 45,000 forms out there that have gone to people. Let's look at the state's short-term strategy in dealing with this, because we've gotten a lot of questions from listeners. First of all, let's say I'm a person. I got the 1099. It's got my name on it. It's got my Social Security number on it. Everything looks good. What am I supposed to do with it?
We are... Because we wanted to take an extra step in the precaution scenario, that we have asked that we are recalling all 1099s and asking anybody who received an original 1099 from just the Department of Labor. So there are many other state departments and entities that issue 1099s. But if you received a Vermont Department of Labor 1099 initially during the first week in February, we want you to return those to the department. That is the safest way that we can ensure that these documents don't end up in someone else's hands and that they're destroyed appropriately. We do know that some people have taken upon themselves to return them already, but we did, as just one additional step to make it easy for people to return them, send everybody who would have received one of these 1099s a letter and a self-addressed prepaid envelope for them to return the 1099s to the department. And those recall notifications and return envelopes started going out at the first part of this week. So the first thing we want you to do is, even if you think all the information is correct, just put it aside. Don't file your taxes yet. Return it to the department, and we will reissue you a validated 1099 document that has gone through multiple quality checks, both automated as well as manual inspection.
Commissioner, we have a number of people who have written this who want to know, why are Social Security numbers on these 1099 forms in the first place? Is it they feel that it's not required by law?
In most cases, so I think part of what we have to do, and some of this just speaks to how long and the age of the unemployment insurance system. So again, we operate most of our unemployment insurance benefits off of a 50-year-old mainframe. In the backbone of every state's unemployment insurance program is Social Security numbers. So all benefits that are paid out in regardless of state are tied to an employee's Social Security number. So that Social Security number is used to pay benefits. It's used for employers to report employees and coverage and pay taxes on those employees to the department, which is where the benefit funds come from, is employer contribution. So the entire system is designed around this single identifier. Now, we collect names and birth dates and do cross checks, but it is all tied into a Social Security number. And that is really what follows the claimant from employment to employment to employment. And then should they become unemployed, then the benefits are cross-matched against the employment history of that Social Security number. So, you know, some of this is just the fact that this these arcane systems have been around so long, and that was the way they have been designed. It's the way the federal law and state law is written for compliance purposes. I think what you will find is most people, when they receive a 1099, it does have a Social Security number at the top of it. What we are looking at is whether or not we can truncate the Social Security number and only provide like the last four digits. But it is a form of validation check from the claimant who's receiving the 1099 to ensure that the information they're receiving is correct. And if the Social Security number does not match, then they know there is an issue with the 1099 they received. part of that too is, you know, the reason I say we're looking into truncating 10 Social Security numbers is that that's not actually how our mainframe system is coded. So it actually does require some recoding of our mainframe to truncate Social Security numbers. So again, some of this is about the age and of the legacy systems that have just been around for so long and how they were originally coded.
Let's go to our listeners and start with Peter, who's calling from Burlington. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Just a question. It's something of a technicality, maybe. You're calling this a data breach, and you're talking a lot about the systems and mainframes, and then you had just said that it was the fault of a bad spreadsheet sort, which is unrelated to any of those other things. So could you maybe just address that a little bit, and I'll take my answer up there.
Sure.
Commissioner, please go ahead.
I think we do, you know, we do have protocols and procedures, and the state does as well, for what happens when, let's say, there's a loss of data, right? So, or improper release of data. And by definition, this does come under a breach situation because data was lost in this scenario. However, I think just, you know, colloquially, we look at breach as something to do with technology, you know, someone tapping into a system and stealing information. And while this was due to a manual human error, because it's a loss of protected information or improper release of protected information, it does fall under the breach requirements and breach notification requirements and statute. So, you know, one of the things we did originally when we realized that this had happened, you know, we have an obligation to notify the Attorney General's office in a short period of time of the situation, and then they will evaluate the system and determine, you know, what our immediate obligation and response needs to be. And we did that in this case. So, you know, under the statutorial definition, this is considered a breach of some kind.
Commissioner, we've gotten a number of emails from people who have not gotten their 1099 forms yet. As you said, the department sent out a bunch of the 1099 forms, and then when problems developed, you stopped sending them. They're wondering, since they haven't gotten a form yet, is there anything they're supposed to do, and is their information safe?
Yeah, thanks, Bob, and thanks for having me on today, because I do know there's a lot of questions and concerns from the public. So sometimes it just helps to be able to walk people through the specific questions they're having. So the one thing I would say to anybody, just given the age we're in, UI, unemployment insurance, identity theft and fraud has been significant across the entire country. And there have been many stories out there about fraudsters taking data that was stolen many years in the past, maybe as far back as 2015, 2013, and actually holding on to that data for the right opportune time. And COVID just happened to be that time. So we are finding just in general that other breaches that have occurred in the past, large scale breaches from mainstream companies that I think we probably are all aware of, we probably at some point in our lives have received notices from, was actually then turned around and used during COVID by fraudsters to file faulty unemployment insurance claims. So in general, I have always encouraged people, you know, be very cautious and monitor your financial accounts, your bank accounts, your credit card statements. I think it doesn't hurt to go on to the three major credit bureaus and put a security freeze on your credit. It won't impact you. It is free. What it does is just makes it that much harder for a fraudster to use your information and maybe take out a loan or open up another account in your name. So I would just encourage people, regardless of this situation, although I think this heightens that need, but they should be looking at these other measures that are out there, because fraud during COVID has skyrocketed. In this specific case, we sent out what was likely about, you know, I would say 50 to 55,000 1099s, maybe some more that had gone out through the PUA program, but we had not mailed all the 1099s. And so as soon as we started receiving word that there were issues with the 1099s and that they were faulty, we immediately put a word out to the state postmaster, and he or she put out notifications to all the different postmasters across the state, and we began to recapture a number of 1099s that never actually made it to mailboxes. You know, the good part there was that, you know, it is really specific to these two programs. But the ones that had gone out the door were the Lost Wages Assistance Program, a portion of the Vermont Short-Term Supplemental Benefit Program, and the PUA. We only found errors in the Lost Wages Assistance and the Vermont Short-Term Supplemental. So if you didn't receive a 1099, yet it is likely that we caught that at the post office, or it never even made it to the post office because we stopped all printing and mailing operations immediately. So it just means that you will receive a new, or in this case, a validated 1099 that is likely to go out in the next 2 weeks. And it means that you probably didn't, one of these got stopped. I would still encourage people, though, if they were expecting a 1099 from the department, you know, there is potentially that that information could have made it into the wrong hands if they were in one of those collecting benefits in one of those programs I mentioned. And that is why the state and the governor has also prioritized and emphasized our need as a state government to offer protection for people. So the one thing I will say is that in the next week, people will start receiving a letter from a vendor known as IDX. It is a vendor that the state and the department has contracted with to offer identity theft protection. And they will receive a letter and notification on how to enroll in identity protection services. So if they are concerned, if they believe that they were in the LWA or the Vermont Short-Term Supplemental Program, and they are worried that they are at high risk of having their identity fraudulently used, they can enroll for free in this service. But it has to be through the IDX vendor that we have contracted with that they will receive notification from. With that, I think it was really important for us to just, out of an abundance of caution and to allay the fears of all claimants, we have decided to provide identity protection to anybody who filed and received benefits in 2020, regardless of what program they were in. So any claimant that filed in 2020 and received a benefit and therefore will receive a 1099 also has the opportunity to enroll in identity theft protection.
So we've gotten a couple of emails about the identity theft protection programs. First one off is, why are you waiting a week to do this? How come those letters aren't going out this week?
So part of the pieces that have gone into this is identifying a vendor, contracting with the vendor. We were able to execute on the contract earlier this week. And then we have to provide the contractor with a master list of all, essentially all claimants or anybody who will be eligible for this benefit. And so what we need to do is make sure that we are also validating the data that we are going to send to the vendor so that when someone calls and says, I received this letter, I'd like to sign up, that their information that the vendor is validating on the back end matches up. So there is a level of data validation that has to happen to get the 101,000 claimants over to the vendor. And then the vendor will mail out those letters. So that's still happening. The reason I said next week is, you know, part of that will be exactly when the letter gets mailed, how long it takes to get delivered. Once the letter gets mailed, though, individuals can call this vendor and sign up. They don't have to wait for the letter to be received. And we will be putting out a notification once the letter, all the individuals have been uploaded into the vendor system, and when they can sign up and when the letter goes out. So they don't need to wait for the letter, but the letter will provide them with much more detail in terms of instructions on how to enroll and what to expect. So that, you know, again, we're moving as quickly as we can, but we also want to make sure that any information that we're processing has been validated multiple times before it goes to either a vendor or, in the case of reprinting new 1099s, making sure we've now validated that information multiple times, all the way up to and including the printing and mailing.
The second question has to do with the fact that the state is offering these identity protection services for 12 months. And this listener says the fallout from identity theft and related fraud can potentially be a security threat to people for a lifetime. As you mentioned, there are people who got a hold of fraudulent data years and years ago and now have decided during the pandemic to try to exploit that. And so this listener wants to know, why 12 months? Why shouldn't it be longer?
Yeah, that's a good point of clarification. So we are identifying that it will be a minimum of 12 months. It will be longer than 12 months for individuals. However, just out of safety and security reasons, we want that to be articulated in the letter that goes directly to the claimant, or in this case, the individual, for protection services, so that we're not broadcasting exactly how long the protection will last for. And that's just out of, again, an abundance of caution and protecting individuals' safety. So it will be a minimum of 12 months, but it will be longer than 12 months.
Are we talking about a couple of years?
It will be longer than 12 months. I'm not going to get into exactly how long. Again, that was a recommendation from both our risk management office as well as the vendor, that we don't broadcast the length of the coverage, and that the individuals who receive the letter and the notification will have that articulated to them in the letter.
Let's turn to Maggie, who's calling from Burlington. Hey, Maggie, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you so much. My question is, I received three 1099-Gs. Yesterday, I received one envelope to return them, and then reading the instructions, it said to just put one per envelope. So that's what I did. So I'm assuming I'll get two more envelopes.
Thank you for the call and the clarification. And I didn't get a chance to mention it earlier, but just so folks know, again, as we talk about issuing 1099s for 13 different programs out of five different systems, part of that meant that we had to issue separate 1099s depending on which system you were the benefit was managed in. So there wasn't a mechanism to actually combine them all into one 1099. And when you're talking about 100,000 people or 180,000 1099s, that became a very heavy lift. So you are right in that you would have received multiple 1099s depending on the programs you filed in. And then we are issuing, again, because we didn't, we wanted to make sure we didn't skip anybody in the recall notice. We simply sent the recall notice and the envelopes to each population for each program that would have received a separate 1099. So if someone does end up putting all three into one envelope and sending it back to the department, that's fine. It's not an issue. Those will be destroyed appropriately as well. But because we had numerous different populations we were working with, in some cases, again, individuals overlapped multiple programs for benefits, the easiest thing was to say, if we issued three 1099s, we're going to issue three recall notices and three return envelopes. So in this case, Maggie, if you will get two more recall envelopes. And if you don't, certainly let us know. But you should receive two more, and you can send them back accordingly.
Maggie, thanks for your phone call. Let's turn to Nancy, who's calling from Stowe. Hi, Nancy. Welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you so much for taking my call. So my question is similar, pretty much the same as one that did not actually get answered yet, or at least I did not hear the answer. I think that I should have gotten a W-2, but because I had taxes deducted from my unemployment, and I got both the federal unemployment and the state for a short period of time last year, and I have not received a 1099 or a W-2 as of yet. So possibly mine was withheld. But since there was a mix-up, my information could have gone out to somebody else. How will I know that that didn't happen?
Or how will I know that it didn't? Yeah, thank you for that question. So we don't issue W-2s. Those come from employers. But you should receive a 1099 if you receive benefits. But just to clarify, there were a number of 1099s that never made it out the door. So when we look at actually the population of 1099s that got mailed, we're actually talking about somewhere around 85,000 1099s, or maybe even less than that, that actually went out the door out of the 180,000. So there were probably somewhere between 100 and 125,000 that we were able to stop and make sure they never got mailed. And so, but if you did receive an LWA benefit, then you would be in that population of higher risk, because we do know there were issues with that information going to the wrong people. If you receive the Vermont short-term supplemental benefit, likewise, we do know there were issues in that population as well. So that is another higher risk category. So in those cases, you know, and I know that sometimes the names are confusing. So one of the things is that you will obviously, when we reissue the validated 1099s, you will be able to tell on the 1099 which 1099 you are receiving. And so it is marked in the bottom left hand corner. It does identify what program it came from. But just to reiterate for folks who are listening, the Lost Wages Assistance Program was issued during the month of August of 2020. And that came from a presidential order to use FEMA money to pay for that benefit. The Vermont short-term supplemental benefit was issued during the month of October of 2020. So if you were filing for regular benefits, either in unemployment insurance or PUA during the month of August or October, then you likely received this benefit and therefore would be in the higher risk category in terms of having had your information go to maybe a wrong address or a wrong person. So again, that's one way right out of the gate to identify whether you fall in that population or not.
And Commissioner, just to be clear, if someone is listening to the program and they're saying, well, I haven't gotten my 1099 form yet, as Nancy was suggesting, so therefore I must be in the clear in terms of my personal financial information being shared with other people, they're not actually in the clear because it's very possible that their financial information was sent mistakenly to somebody else.
That's correct. And so it's really more important that someone determine whether or not they received the lost wages assistance benefit in August or the Vermont short-term benefit in October. And if they did, then they were part of that population. But yes, if just because they didn't receive one yet does not mean they're necessarily in the clear. I think we're also trying to just act out of an abundance of caution. So I think that's why we're encouraging everybody to just be very mindful. You know, the easiest immediate free thing that people can do is simply log on to the credit bureaus. You can either call or you can go online. And all that information is posted on our website. But you can literally, in a matter of minutes, put a security freeze on your credit. It's free. And that is the easiest thing to do right out of the gate. Then they can decide if they want to enroll. And if they feel like they're in one of these high-risk categories and want to enroll in additional ID protection, we're also making that available to them as well.
Commissioner, you know, we've heard for, I think, at least the last year or two, you have talked about how antiquated the computer system is over at the Department of Labor, and it sounds like it's worse than many other departments of state government. I think sometimes you talk about a 40-year-old mainframe. I'm wondering, what's the plan to upgrade your computer equipment? How much money is it going to take to really upgrade the system to where it should be?
So thanks, Bob. The system we have, or the mainframe we have right now, turned 50 years old on June 9th, 2020. I think one thing to note is that even, I know we want to blame everything on the mainframe, and that has certainly created and continues to create challenges for us. But obviously COVID was far and away a much bigger issue than any one system. And so when we looked across the country at other states that had upgraded their systems recently, they still weren't prepared. There are certainly things that they can do more efficiently and timely with less effort. But no state was in a good position when COVID hit. And like I said, that really comes out of the fact that there are 13 different benefit programs out of 5 different systems. And I think, you know, the state has looked and has worked on modernizing the UI system over the years. It's not an easy thing to do. And partially is because everything in unemployment insurance is grounded in a series of federal requirements. But then each state obviously has their own state statute on how certain components of the benefit program are administered. And so it's not like a federal program where it's administered identically in every state. Every state also has their own state statutes, which just further complicates the issue and makes it the complexity that much more greater. When we look at modernization across, a number of other states, the average to modernize a UI system is somewhere probably around $40 million, and it can take anywhere from 2 to 4 years. I saw an article the other day that there was a state that spent $77 million on modernizing, and it was a failed project. And there are many stories, if you look back over the past 10 years, of tens of millions of dollars being spent to try to modernize these systems just to have the effort fail in the end. So it's not something that's quick. It is extremely challenging given how long unemployment insurance has been around and the number of changes that have happened over the years. So we are venturing out on that journey of modernizing again. The governor has proposed money in his budget for phase one of a modernization effort. The phase one is simply the interface for both claimants and employers predominantly. And that is roughly a $3.5 to $4 million phase one. But the total project we're likely looking at is probably somewhere around $25 to $35 million once it's fully implemented.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Kate in Brattleboro. Hi, Kate. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question for the commissioner is, yesterday I was watching the Senate Economic Development and Commerce Committee, and the governor's deputy chief of staff was on, sort of is giving an update. And she mentioned that on the new 1099s that we'll be receiving are names and addresses and amounts received will be correct, but there's a chance that some of us could receive 1099s with an incorrect Social Security number. So I'm wondering how that could be possible through all the cross-checking.
Sure. So our goal is to implement multiple validations, and that means I don't want to get too far down into the weeds, but we are looking at potentially three different automated validation checks against, name and social in different databases, either at the national level, but also at the state level with other state departments. So I think the possibility of that is very minimal once we have run those validation checks. It's not uncommon, actually, for the department to send out a 1099 and have a claimant call and say, the social security number on my 1099 does not match mine. And what we find is that typically it's a transposing of numbers when the claimant actually filed for benefits. And so, sometimes it really is just human error on the claimant's part in terms of when they type in their address, they may inadvertently type in an address, or they haven't kept their address current with the department. So they may have moved multiple times, but we use the address that's on file. Or in some cases, it's a transposing of numbers or digits in a social security number. So it's not necessarily that they put in someone else's, intentionally put in someone else's social security number, but they transposed a digit and therefore it doesn't match what their actual social is. So we have actually looked at ways that we can cross-check both name and address and also name and social in a variety of different systems because our data is only as good as what is put into it. So that's why we are looking towards working with other vendors that we already have contracts with. We're looking at potentially the Social Security Administration, also looking at potentially using some state systems to cross-match both address and social security numbers. So again, I think that, we want to always point out that there is that potential if someone, didn't give us the right information. But I think with the number of cross checks that we are putting into place, those types of situations will be minimal.
Kate, thanks for your phone call. Let's talk to Celia in Stowe. Hi, Celia. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. How will we know when we get a valid 1099? How will that be identified?
The first thing we're doing is making sure that the envelope that you receive actually says important tax document enclosed, as most, most tax documents when they're sent out. The original ones came in a generic envelope. Part of what, is very different. So if the question is also like, how is this year different than other years just based on volume? In years past, the department has been able to manage not only the pulling of data from the system, the printing of the 1099s, and also the mailing of the 1099. So all of that occurred in our central office in-house. And so the ability to conduct validity checks throughout the entire process was much easier then. Because of the high volume that we had, we actually had to have use other print shops and other methods for mailing than we would traditionally use. And so part of that too was just the fact that this data and effort was crossing outside of the Department of Labor to other print shops and then being mailed out by either the department or through another mechanism. So it just, again, the complexity grew with the size and scale of what we were trying to achieve. But the new ones will likely have an additional letter enclosed with them or some type of notification enclosed with them, but the actual envelopes will also say important tax document enclosed.
Celia, thanks for that question. A lot of people have that question today. Commissioner, we're almost out of time, but I just wanted to follow up on the computer question. You said it would take 2 to 4 years and $40 million to really go at this system and to upgrade it the way that it would need to be upgraded in the future. The governor's proposal is something like $3 million. Sounds like a short-term fix that would take a year or two. Does that give us the indication that it is going to be quite some time before your computer system is operating the way that it should?
I don't think so. I mean, it certainly will not happen overnight. I kind of gave you the average of what other states have experienced. Part of what we have to also put into perspective is when the governor and the legislature propose and approve a budget, they're looking at a 12-month period. So part of what we're needing to do is say, what can we actually achieve in the first initial 12 months? So we still have to put out a request for proposals, select a vendor, establish a contract. So I would say the $3.5 million is really just the initial steps. Once we've identified the vendor that will provide the core system, it will move much more quickly. I think we would also love to see a future federal allocation for federal funding to support this effort, as many states would. So again, I wouldn't use the fact that it's only $3.5 million for year one as a indication that it's going to be a slow and arduous process. It was just, what can we likely achieve in the initial year right out of the gate? I'd also add, Bob, if I could, just 2 seconds. I don't think we would have been any better prepared had we had a new system in place right at the start of COVID. I think one thing COVID has taught us when we're looking at a new system is how flexible can we make that system. If we're going to need to stand up new benefit programs, supplemental benefit programs, and so on and so forth in a moment's notice, we need a system that is much more flexible and able to do that in short order. So I do think the system we will build post-COVID will be better than any system we would have built before COVID-19.
Commissioner, we're almost out of time. We've got a couple people who want to know, when should they look to see these new 1099 forms being sent out, the updated forms? When will those start to be mailed out?
So the recall notices started going out this week, so they will receive them this week and next week. Next week, they will likely receive the letter from the vendor for identity protection. And we will also start issuing new corrected, validated 1099s, hopefully during the end of the week of the 15th and through the week of the 22nd. So I would say over the next 2 weeks, we will work to get new 1099s out before February 26th.
Michael Harrington is the commissioner at the Department of Labor. We've been discussing the data breach involving certain tax forms sent out by the Labor Department. Commissioner, many, many thanks for taking the time to answer our questions today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Bob, and thank you to everybody out there. Our department is working really hard, and so is state government, to make sure we correct this issue and do better going forward.